It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Insider attack.
An anonymous editorial, meaning gutless, a gutless editorial.
Fear and loathing at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, with President Trump on the trail of a traitor. Top aides deny and defend.
I think it's a disgrace.
It's not mine.
I do not write the op-ed.
How far will Trump go to root out the enemy within? Counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, is here next. Plus, warning signs? Nebraska's Ben Sasse uses the Kavanaugh hearings to slam Congress.
The legislature is impotent. The legislature is weak.
But is he about to quit the Republican Party? Senator Sasse, just moments away. And gloves off.
These are extraordinary times, and they're dangerous times.
As the stakes for the midterm elections get higher,
they'll say, we want to impeach him.
If it does happen, it's your fault because you didn't go out to vote.
Is the president right to worry? The top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, Mark Warner, is here live. Hello, I'm Vic Tapper in Washington, where the state of our union is full of drama. Drama in the White House, the president raging over that rogue, anonymous senior administration official. Drama on Capitol Hill, Democrats swinging for the fences in a desperate bid to knock off Trump's second Supreme Court nominee. And drama on the campaign trail, with President Obama's high-octane, unprecedented 2018 debut. Fewer than 60 days out from the most consequential midterm elections in recent memory, the evidence of dysfunction and chaos inside the White House has never been more convincing, laid out in exhaustive detail in a new book by Bob Woodward, a meticulous and highly respected reporter, and in that anonymous op-ed describing the president as ignorant and unhinged.
Good morning. Sandy Rios back with you. That was Jake Tapper on CNN over the weekend. And I just wanted you to hear that because the president is raging. Drama in the White House, dysfunction, chaos. Yes, indeed. I believe that's probably true. But here's the truth. The real truth is that the left plants their people inside. They create chaos. The president responds. And then they accuse the president of creating chaos. That's pretty much the way this is working. And so Chuck Todd actually interviewed Ben Sasse. I guess he was making the rounds on Sunday. And Ben Sasse, the Republican senator from Nebraska, who's been a never-Trumper from the beginning. Anyway, Ben had this to say, echoing the same theme. Let's listen.
Do you think it's important for the president to publicly stabilize his staffing situation in the White House? Because it certainly looks a little dysfunctional to the public.
You know, I don't have any desire to beat the president up, but it's pretty clear that this White House is a reality show, soap opera presidency. I mean, the drama is the drama of Omarosa and the drama of Cohen and the drama of Manafort and the drama of the Woodward quotes and the drama of these op-eds. What you'd like is the president to not worry so much about the short term of staffing, but the long term of vision casting for America, pull us together as a people, help us deliberate about where we should go, and then build a team of great, big cause, low ego people around you. Right now, it feels like there's just way too much drama every day, and that distracts us from the longer term stuff we should be focused on together.
And that's the president's fault? The Woodward book is the president's fault. Manafort's trial is the president's fault. The left is creating chaos. This is what they do. It's part of their modus operandi. They never waste a good crisis, and they create a crisis when they can because then they march in to take power. That is a leftist strategy from decades ago, and we just have to understand what's actually happening here. I'm going to talk about that today to some extent to kind of rekindle some memories that we've shared together about what's actually taking place, what's real and what isn't, as best we can determine it. I would say that it would be sort of irrational if the president of the United States found out someone inside his White House, allegedly, one of his top officials, allegedly, is writing a piece in the New York Times saying, I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. That was the headline of this article. By now, I'm hoping that you've read it. If you haven't, I want to just share a little bit of it. It starts out, I work for the president, but like-minded colleagues and I have vowed to thwart parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. The dilemma, which he does not fully grasp, is that many of the senior officials in his own administration are working diligently from within to frustrate parts of his agenda and his worst inclinations. I would know. I'm one of them. So that's the way it begins. And then he goes on, talks about how they take papers off of his office so that he won't see things, so he won't be able to proceed with policy. They smile and shake their heads, and then they go and do the opposite of what he's asked. And then he says, this isn't the work of the so-called deep state. It's the work of a steady state. He thinks he's doing something heroic. He's doing this for you, after all. Anonymous is just thinking of you. He's not thinking of himself. This is the patriotic thing to do. And then he goes on and tells us more about him by saying the following things. He says, given the instability many witnessed, there were early whispers within the cabinet of invoking the 25th Amendment, which would start a complex process for removing the president. But no one wanted to precipitate a constitutional crisis. So we will do what we can to steer the administration in the right direction until one way or another it's over. How very noble of them to steer the administration in the right direction, according to them. And then you wonder, well, what direction do you think this anonymous person thinks is the right direction? Let me just give you a little idea, because in his letter, he says, or article, Mr. Anonymous, Senator John McCain put it best in his farewell letter. All Americans should heed his words and break free of the tribalism trap with the high aim of uniting through our shared values and love of this great nation. We may no longer have Senator McCain, but we will always have his example, a lodestar for restoring honor to public life and our national dialogue. Mr. Trump may fear such honorable men, but we should revere them. Really, that told me all I needed to know about Anonymous. And now that we are past the McCain memorials, and a reason I'm mentioning this now is in the context of this, Mr. Anonymous holds Mr. McCain up as his standard, who we should all be listening to, person who loves the country, has so much integrity. And I want to tell you a few things about Senator McCain that I did not tell you during that week of mourning. Let me just say that Mr. McCain was known as the Songbird by the North Vietnamese because within 4 days of his capture, he went into them and told them, I will tell you everything you want to know. You might not know, because most of you haven't served in the military, that there's a code of honor. You give your name, rank, and serial number, that's all. John McCain told them everything, and he did it many times. My understanding is he did it at least 30 videos, propaganda videos for the North Vietnamese. If you'd like to see one, just pull it up you can just find it anywhere on the internet. And many people are saying, many Vietnam vets told me that one of the reasons he had injuries at all was because when he jumped out of his plane, he did not use protocol. You're supposed to hold your arms up straight. Instead, he held his down at his side, and that's how he broke his arms. He was injured being ejected from the plane. Some Vietnam vets who were in captivity with him do not think he was tortured. Just saying, he was injured from his flight out of the plane, but many do not think he was tortured because he cooperated. Why would he be tortured? He told them everything. I read an article about him giving an interview with a Cuban communist journalist. And one of the prisoners happened to go into the room while McCain was in there. And McCain was sitting there drinking tea and having cake with this journalist. He was treated differently. They called him the prince. And then I, over the weekend, found out some other things that I'm just going to tell you. This isn't stuff you're not going to hear probably anywhere else. But you might recall... No, I'm gonna slow up. I've had two different sources for additional information that I had never heard. These things I knew about him already. In fact, the Forrestal accident, upon which he has boasted many times about, people have boasted about his heroism and the flight of the Forrestal. And I've known for many years that actually the crash of that and the death of those Navy airmen was his fault because of the things that he did. He graduated fifth from the bottom of his class, and he was always trouble, always. His dad was an admiral. His grandfather was an admiral. And John McCain, yes, he was a maverick, all right. But he was a maverick who caused some terrible things to happen. Now, a Vietnam vet who was in Hanoi Hilton with him, and I have this on good authority, was released at the same time that John McCain was released. This is pretty tough stuff I'm getting ready to tell you. But I just think the record needs to be set straight. They were leaving on a flight to go see their wives for the first time. In one case, this person had been 7 years. For McCain, it had been 5 years. It's a long time for anybody to be in captivity. The first person I mentioned was terribly tortured, was maimed, was concerned about seeing his wife and what she might think, and at the same time thrilled to see her. And what he said was that Mr. McCain was observing the stewardesses on the flight, and all he could talk about was what he wanted to do to them in a sexual way. And that when they landed and entered the waiting area where the wives were, that John McCain said to him, look at his wife, by the way, John McCain's wife, had been very active in the POW-MIA movement. And she really poured her heart into it. And somewhere along the way, she had a bad accident and was a bit disfigured and had gained some weight. And when John walked into the area with this other Vietnam captive, not from Vietnam, but American captive out of Vietnam prison, he said to the American other prisoner, look at my wife. She's turned into nothing but a big fat pig. And within just a few months, McCain had left his wife and gone on, and then he linked up with Cindy McCain. I don't know the timeline there, but that's John McCain. Then it doesn't end there, though. Later on, when the Senate wanted to, and the House, it was a huge thing in the United States in the late 70s and 80s, to find out if there were prisoners of war, if there were people missing in action, where were they? We needed to identify them. America does not leave their soldiers behind. We bring them home, even if it's just their bodies, but we identify them. We give dignity to them in death. And there was a huge resistance, and the person that led the resistance and actually stopped it from happening was John McCain. You can see this online, too. You can Bob Smith, who was a senator from New Hampshire, who I remember well, it said that John McCain made sure he was on the head of every committee to stop this. John Kerry worked with him. Why would they do this? Because the feeling is that all the records from Vietnam then would be exposed, and John Kerry and John McCain would be exposed for what they actually did, which was not heroic. And so to take this one step further, I have one more story to tell you. You remember that John McCain was buried next to his friend at the Naval Academy. They did tell us that. He was laid to rest next to his very best friend, Chuck Larson. Well, it turns out I found out that Chuck Larson was the admiral of the Pacific Fleet. And this is one of the things that bonded them. There were so many people who took on upon themselves to find out who the missing in action and POWs were. One gentleman had collected just a huge, like a warehouse full of people having sighted American soldiers in Vietnam. He was collecting this in the U.S. Embassy in Bangkok, meticulously cataloging each and every one of them. For whatever reason, Admiral Chuck Larson, with a couple of aides, flew to Bangkok to the embassy, and over the weekend they shredded every piece of information that the gentleman had collected. This is from a very reputable source. I'm telling you this. So when you cite John McCain as your a standard of honor and integrity, I reject that, and I reject the writing of anyone who uses him as the standard. That was anonymous inside the White House. There's more to say about that. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered. And now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 855-PSALM-23 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Coe, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
A teenager at Union Mine High School in El Dorado, California, is facing two counts of battery. Police say she attacked a classmate who was wearing a Make America Great Again ball cap. The suspect was thrown out of class but later returned and accosted a teacher. The teenager defended her actions in an interview with CBS News, says the hat is a symbol of racism and hate. She went on to say the altercation was about making a political statement. This is what happens when left-wing lawmakers in the mainstream media call out Trump supporters. This is the result of people like Maxine Waters urging her followers to harass conservatives. The folks on CNN and MSNBC would have you believe that gun-toting, Bible-clinging deplorables are a danger to society, when in fact the exact opposite is true. Some will call what happened in that classroom Trump derangement syndrome, but it ought to be called a felony. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The so-called resistance is angry because their horrible ideas have been rejected by the American people, and it's driving them crazy. Crazy. They're the ones, honestly, that have been driven crazy. The latest act of resistance is the op-ed published in the failing New York Times by an anonymous, gutless coward. You just look. He was, or she, although they put he, but probably that's a little disguise. That means it's she. But for the sake of our national security, the New York Times should publish his name at once. I think their reporters should go and investigate who it is. That would actually be a good scoop. That would be a good scoop. Unelected deep state operatives who defy the voters to push their own secret agendas are truly a threat to democracy itself. And I was so heartened when I looked. I think it's backfired. Seriously, people that don't exactly dig us and they don't exactly like me. They're fighting for us. It's an incredible, it's actually a beautiful thing. We've picked up a lot of support because at some point this whole thing is going to be exposed. And it's really bad and it's really dangerous and it's really sad for the media and the mainstream media. It really is sad.
All right, that's President Trump at a rally in Montana just this last week. And of course, he's talking about the the anonymous writer in the New York Times. I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration, as though it's something to boast about. I can't really understand why on any level you would be proud of that. If you thought that, if you really believed that, the president was so off base and so dangerous that you needed to subvert or rechannel or intercede on behalf of the American people, why in the world would you write? Why would you put it in an article? Why would you do that if that was your motive? This is so self-aggrandizing and so very dangerous. I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, is this illegal? You know, how bad is it? I just read an article in the New York Times over the weekend. Actually, it's a different outlet. It's WRAL.com. I'm not sure what that is. I've been seeing it more lately. But the article is this. The Trump administration discussed coup plans with rebel Venezuelan officers. And then it goes through and says that the Trump administration held secret meetings. Now, do we need to know that? Do we need to know that? And who's leaking that? And you see how this goes. And I mean, this is just something that came out yesterday. I could tell you story after story of things that are being leaked from inside the White House and the administration, which leads me to, I have explained this to you before, but I will again. When the president has made some really bad personnel choices, I think he made some right up front, and then the thing just spiraled. And one of them was Reince Priebus. Reince's connections were all, he was deeply entwined, whether Reince personally believed in the president, he seemed to for a while. But his contacts and commitments were to the Never Trumpers. They were to the Republican establishment. And so he appointed, the Heritage Foundation and many, many other people that I know well were vetting candidates. Some of them were candidates themselves to serve in the administration, people that actually supported the president's policies and wanted to serve. And they were vetted. And there were tons of them handed over to the administration. But Reince Priebus, as chief of staff, hired a gentleman named Johnny Stefano, who had worked for John Boehner. And Johnny Stefano was then and still is the gatekeeper for personnel. And trust me, he's not on the side of President Donald Trump. And so the White House has been filled with people just like this staffer. We've been trying, many of us have been trying to warn the administration, but it just that there are so many of them and it's gone so deeply, it's almost impossible. So don't be surprised. And the surprising thing is that President Trump has been able to advance any of his policies. I tell you, it's just amazing. I'm going to give you just an idea. Chris Hull read an article, I believe, for the Daily Caller, in which he says, personnel is policy. President Trump has just learned this lesson yet again the hard way. And he goes into saying, for those of us watching the White House hiring process, this is painfully unsurprising. The administration has been systematically stacked with anti-Trump, globalist, establishment, left-leaning swamp creatures. You might remember that H.R. McMaster was a total Trump. He absolutely disagreed with President Trump on everything. I remember that he fired all the national security experts on the National Security Council, like Sebastian Gorka and many others that you've heard on this show, because I know several of them, just cleaned house and put in place people who were Obama appointees, Clinton acolytes, and proceeded to just ignore the president at every turn on every issue. He's gone now, and things have changed. You know, John Bolton is there now, so that's one of the reasons why North Korea, I'm confident, Ambassador Bolton gave strong advice on what to do about North Korea and Syria. Clear thinking, good advice, on the same page with President Trump, but that's just one appointee. And so Chris goes through and explains some of the terrible appointees. I'll mention one. Brian Hook, who was referred to as one of the worst George W. Bush administration officials who worked on UN issues. He co-founded the John Hay Initiative, a group that organized a letter of 100 Republican foreign policy experts who would refuse to back Trump. That's Brian Hook. Brian Hook was all about the Iran deal. When the president withdrew from the Iran deal, he traveled around Europe stressing that even though President Trump has canceled the Iran deal, all of its instrumentalities should be left in place until a new one is signed. And yet, our understanding is that he's been promoted, Brian Hook. That is just one person. I'm not going to take time to read other names because you get the idea. So don't be surprised that there is a strong strain of resistance inside the White House. They've been there since the beginning, and I'm not sure what we're going to do about that. You know, you can only say so much, and it's not just never Trumpers who were part of the Bush administration, Republicans who were embarrassed by him. It's also Obama appointees. It was like H.R. McMaster and even James Mattis were Democrats, very strongly connected to the Hillary Clinton campaign. They would have been the pick if she had won. But the president, in his defense, he's not a politician. He doesn't know the personalities in Washington, and he has to depend on people to recommend names and people to him. And then I think it would be natural that you would then trust that the people that are working, certainly in the White House, would be in support of your agenda, they wouldn't have been chosen, right? But no, didn't happen that way. And so you see how this thing works. Well, of course, at the same time that the anonymous person was writing, and then back to the beginning of the show where Jake Tapper and Senator Ben Sasse were talking about the chaos in the White House and how it's the president's fault that this chaos in the White House. They had nothing to do with it. I mean, this anonymous and the other leakers, the people that are trying to undermine him, they had nothing to do with the chaos. It must be just President Trump, right? So, I mean, this is the thing. They cause it, and then they accuse him of it. And so you have to be aware of that. Bob Woodward's book is coming out. I'm going to be doing a longer interview on this, but I want to refer to Diana West's article, The Fear in Bob Woodward's Soul. Now, many of us were around long enough to remember Watergate, and we remember how Bob Woodward and his buddy, Carl Bernstein, were just lionized. They were made into deities for bringing down President Richard Nixon. Now, with the way you are seeing this and experiencing it on the front row about these attempts to destroy President Trump, it might possibly give you some insight into what was happening then, because what was happening then is very much like what's happening now. And of course, the history has been made on this. Richard Nixon has been ruined for life and even in death, his reputation. And again, I would not say that Richard Nixon was a perfect man, but he did a lot of great things that you probably never heard about, because you can't say anything good about Richard Nixon. You just can't. But Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward, oh my goodness, they're the saints of journalism. Well, not so much. In fact, Ben Bradley himself said in his own book that he feared that they were many, many things they made up in their book and their reporting were not true. And I'm going to get to that. I won't get to that today, but I'm going to try to talk to Diana, and we'll have a long, when Bob Woodward's book comes out, and I think it's today, we'll have a longer discussion about that. But I just wanted you to know that. In fact, we'll put this on our Facebook page so that you can at least read it. The Fear in Bob Woodward's Soul. It's by Diana West. So then you have the trifecta. You've got Barack Obama speaking at the University of Illinois in Champaign, Urbana. That's actually, my husband went to law school there. That's like home. That's home ground for us. Very familiar with the University of Illinois. So President Obama goes in and speaks to the students and takes credit for the economy says terrible things about Donald Trump and makes them laugh. It's pretty charming. But I just want you to hear a montage that was prepared by Fox of the things that President Obama said and then President Trump's response to them, just to give you an idea of what's happening. Let's listen.
We have the best economy in history.
When you hear how great the economy is doing right now, let's just remember when this recovery started.
More than 4 million jobs created since the election.
That's a kind of remind them, actually, those job numbers are the same as they were in 2015 and 2016.
I think he was trying to take some credit. He was trying to take credit for this incredible thing that's happening to our country.
It did not start with Donald Trump. He is a symptom, not the cause. He's just capitalizing on resentments that politicians have been fanning for years.
I'm sorry I watched it, but I fell asleep. I found he's very good. Very good for sleeping.
All right, so that's the back and forth between President Barack Obama and President Donald Trump. You have to know that presidents, since the time of George Washington, have just, it's not a law, but they have sort of receded into the background. Remember how quiet President Bush was? You can remember this. During the term of Barack Obama, he never said a word. And that is actually customary. It's a courtesy to let the new guy run the place, let him have, without you sniping from the shadows. And President Obama has made much of the fact, in fact, he did this with the kids, the students. He claimed that that's why he hadn't spoken to them sooner, but now he spent his entire speech. He said something about, I'm not speaking to you as a former president, I'm speaking to you as an individual. And then he did almost nothing but talk about his administration versus the Trump administration. So you know that that's just not true. I want to highlight a few things. I can't listen. The speech was so long. I've got in front of me in tiny print. It's like 10 pages of tiny print back to back, and I honestly did not watch the whole thing because I think it was 90 minutes, and I did not read the whole thing, but I can read some of this to you. He says, I speak to you not, as I mentioned, as an ex-president, but as a fellow citizen, which is actually pretty humorous, honestly. Then he should have just talked about his daughters and his wife, his golfing, his vacations, but that's not what he talked about. He talked about his administration. He talked about what he always talks about, and that is the LGBT movement. That's a fixation of his. It has been since he was a senator in Illinois. I should know. He never knew. He voted present on almost every piece of legislation, except when it came to abortion and gay rights and human sexuality. He always was the left of the left, the radical, pushing it as far as he could push it. But the rest of it he wasn't so sure about, so he had to get that in as well. And he says, of course, there's always been another darker aspect to America's story. Progress doesn't just move in a straight line. He speaks like a professor, like he's schooling these kids, which I'm sure he is, because what do they know? They're in American public schools. And so he tells them, you know, what he wants them to hear. And then he says, progress just doesn't move in a straight line. More often, it's manufactured by the powerful and the privileged to want to keep us divided. And keep us angry and keep us cynical, because that helps them maintain the status quo and keep their power and keep their privilege. And you happen to be coming of age during one of those moments. It did not start with Donald Trump. He is a symptom, not the cause. I always tell you that the left accuses the right of doing what they themselves do. And so I want to read this phrase again. Progress manufactured by the powerful and the privileged to want to keep us divided. Can we say Barack Obama dividing us to talking about Americans wanting to, you know, cling to their guns and their Bibles, talking about to black students and audiences about racism, stoking the fires of that in ways we had not seen in decades. And then he says, keeping us angry and keeping us cynical, because that helps them maintain the status quo and keep their power and keep their privilege. I say, yes, that's exactly what President Obama represents. He talks about the new normal. Remember he talked about the economy was so good under him. I remember driving across America and seeing all the businesses closed and the car dealerships. It was sickening. I saw people unemployed, people trying to get to work two or three jobs, and we were told this was the new normal. Remember that? This is the new normal. That was the Barack Obama economy. And so there's more to say about that, and I'll say it when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Full weaponization of the federal government to crush a political opponent. Politicians and a political party that build themselves as pro-life while refusing to actually do what's in their power to stop the killing of little babies. The successful and unrelenting advance of regressivism. All of these are signs that our national condition is not merely a natural phenomenon. It's spiritual. Civic engagement without spiritual engagement produces political roller coasters. National course correction will only come by national repentance. We must elevate him.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Some ill-informed Americans believe the Second Amendment exists only to protect the right of colonial militias to be armed. But here's the actual wording. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It's not the right of the militias to keep and bear arms, but the right of the people. Who are the people? Well, that's you and me, ordinary Americans who are looking to protect ourselves and our families. Founding era Supreme Court Justice Joseph Story, in his commentaries on the Constitution, put it this way: the right of the citizens to keep and bear arms has justly been considered as the palladium of the liberties of a republic. I don't find the right of the people hard to understand at all, do you?
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
The Ministry of Preborn meets abortion-minded women right where they are and reaches them with the love of Christ.
We showed her love, and we accept her right where she's at. If the baby's saved by what we do here, and the mother's life is spared from the devastation of abortion, that definitely helps them in this life. But this is not all that there is. We want our clients to know about Jesus.
I got to see his heartbeat. It kind of just looked like a little butterfly in a bubble. The Lord gave me that baby, and he gave me that baby for a reason.
The Ministry of Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country, helping abortion-minded mothers to choose life for their unborn babies. To find out more about how you can help save a baby's life, go to preborn.com or dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Apparently coordinated and certainly well-timed acts of political warfare in the form of a book by Bob Woodward and a New York Times op-ed by somebody purportedly working in the senior ranks of the Trump administration depict the president as crazed and dangerous. The heroes of both of these much ballyhooed purported exposés are those inside the government who were told are really running things by defying and otherwise subverting our elected commander-in-chief. Suddenly, the elite's adamant denials of the existence of an unaccountable so-called deep state have morphed into huzzas over its success in countermanding the will of the American people and the man they elected to govern them. Candidate Donald Trump famously promised to drain the swamp. It's now clear that its denizens inside his administration, both Democrat holdovers and ostensible Republicans, are instead working to drain his presidency. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Give billionaires outside influence over our politics. Systematically attack voting rights to make it harder for young people and minorities and the poor to vote. Handed out tax cuts without regard to deficits. Slash the safety net wherever it could. Cast dozens of votes to take away health insurance from ordinary Americans. Embraced wild conspiracy theories like those surrounding Benghazi or my birth certificate. Rejected science, rejected facts on things like climate change. Embraced a rising absolutism from a willingness to default on America's debt by not paying our bills, to a refusal to even meet much less consider a qualified nominee for the Supreme Court because he happened to be nominated by a Democratic president. None of this is conservative.
That was President Obama at the University of Illinois. You know, this reminds me when I used to debate with I can't even think this morning, on CNN. Oh, I'll think of his name in a second, but it was like, my mother used to say it was like arguing, James Carville, arguing with a circle saw. I had to learn. I know the first time I debated him, I would say something, and then he would come back with a lie, and then another lie, then another lie, then another lie, another lie. It was just come like a circle saw, and I had to think, which of those things do I straighten out? How can I do five? Then I would try to straighten one out, he'd come back with five more. It was impossible. And this is what we have with Barack Obama. The lies in this piece are just absolutely overwhelming. You know, he talks about, he claims things that are just not true. I'll just have to pick out a few because how else can I do this? He says, this Congress has championed the unwinding of campaign finance laws to give billionaires outside influence over our politics. Does he mean, you mean like George Soros and Tom Steyer? Who, that's exactly, I'm telling you, what they accuse the right of doing is what they're doing. These are billionaires who have outsized influence on our politics under Barack Obama, systematically attacking voting rights to make it harder for young people and minorities and the poor to vote. Really? Young people, have you had trouble voting? Minorities have been told they're having trouble voting, but I don't think that's really true. And I don't know of a single policy that's been put into place to target minorities and make it harder for them to vote, except maybe asking to see a proof that you're an American citizen, your driver's license, or some such thing. Like, that's so draconian, but that's the way it's positioned. Then, of course, I want to go on to this because there's been a lot of pushback on this. He accused the GOP of embracing wild conspiracy theories like those surrounding Benghazi or my birth certificate. And then the audience laughs. So in the same breath, he mentions Benghazi and then his birth certificate. Ha, 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 ha. Benghazi? Are you kidding me? I'll let Chris Paranto, who was one of those men who stood on that roof and tried to save the lives, fought to the death, really, trying to defend the embassy and to save his comrades and the people that were there. Chris Paranto, he called President Obama a cowardly blank and a scum for referencing Benghazi in the speech. Benghazi is a conspiracy, Barack Obama, Paranto tweeted. How about we do this? Let's put your cowardly blank on the top of a roof with six of your buddies and shoot RPGs and AK-47s at you while terrorists lob 81-millimeter mortars, killing two of your buddies, all while waiting for U.S. support that you never sent. Could I remind you that in Benghazi, we still don't know where President Obama was that night? We have no idea. The silence was deafening. Same thing with Hillary Clinton. We heard some things earlier in the evening and then nothing all night. While these guys were on the roof defending, some of them being killed, others defending to the death, many, many injuries that you've never heard about. And the president of the United States has the audacity to say that it's a wild conspiracy theory. And when President Obama and Mrs. Clinton said that it was a spontaneous demonstration that happened because of some remote, ridiculous video that was created by an Egyptian who lives in California, it's just mind-boggling. And I want to say that I told you a long time ago, we talked about, remember that movie Gaslighting in the 30s with Charles Boyer and Ingrid Bergman? And it's a story of this handsome young man who marries this beautiful young woman. He's much more seasoned than she is. She's very innocent. And he, for nefarious reasons, wants to make her think that she's crazy. And he sets about creating a narrative. He gets other people to help him. And she actually thinks that she's going crazy. He'll tell her that he'll accuse her of stealing, and then he will plant the item in her purse. And she's so innocent, and she trusts him. She loves him, and she would never suspect that he would do this kind of thing to make her believe something that was false. In one of the last segments. I'll just play. I played some of this for you several months ago because the term is called gaslighting. When you tell people something that's just not true, when you create a facade it's an illusion. And that is exactly what Barack Obama and the left is doing right now. They're creating an illusion. So I want you to hear this final clip with Ingrid Bergman realizes she's not going mad. It's clip 11. Let's listen.
That's what's made me sure my mind is going. Lying in my room, watching the gaslight, listening for someone in a place where no one can go.
Oh, yes, they can. Along the roof from the empty house next door.
But what are you saying?
It fits. It all fits. Tell me, have you ever heard the name Louis Bauer?
It's a trap. I never said I found that envelope.
No, no.
It's a lie.
No.
Go away. Leave this house.
No,
I don't
no,
know.
No, come,
I
come.
About
sit
it.
Down.
I don't.
What do you know about Louis Bauer?
I thought I found an envelope addressed to him. It was when we first came here. That's what started my...
I've got it. I've solved it. I've saved you. God, what a marvelous man I am.
What are you talking about?
Your Mr. Mellon is my Mr. Louis Bauer, a criminal maniac who murdered his aunt and steals back to his own house at night, still searching for those rubies he couldn't find 20 years ago. And every time he lights the gas up in that room, so it dims down here.
When the light brightens, I hear his key in the door a few minutes afterwards. I can't stand it, my mind.
Oh, you're not going out of your mind, Mrs. Mellon. You're slowly and methodically being driven out of your mind. And why? Because quite by accident you got into his identity, and that made you dangerous to him. He couldn't get rid of you by ordinary means, for fear of an inquiry. So he's driving you mad in order to discredit anything that you say as the ravings of a lunatic.
Well, she goes on to say, then I'm not mad, I'm not mad, I'm not mad. And so the point is, if we had more time to play the clips, you could see how Charles Boyer works on her, tells her things that are not true. And the housekeeper helps also. And she literally, a perfectly sane young woman, begins to think that her thinking, her own personal thinking and perceptions are completely wrong and that he is telling her the truth. And then she concludes that she's going crazy. And that's really honestly what's happening in our country. It's happening with our news media. They are presenting things as though they're fact that are not true and making us think that we're crazy, that our instincts are wrong. They do it during elections. They tell you they create polls to prove their point. It's maddening so that we don't really know what's true and what isn't. But I would say this, that we as Christians certainly have the Holy Spirit who guides us into all truth. He really does. I remember back in the 70s when the Vietnam War and the Nixon situation was happening, there was no alternative media. There was no Fox News, and there was no internet with all of these writers. There were periodicals, but not very many. And so I have to tell you that I knew something was really, really wrong. I just knew it. I knew what I was hearing was not true, but I didn't know what the real truth was. So I'm telling you that as much as you are spend time with the Lord and in his word, God will give you wisdom. You'll know when things are true and when they aren't. You might not know the details, but just don't swallow hook, line, and sinker what you're hearing. You can find the truth now. That's the good thing about the internet. You can actually, if you look at sources that you trust, you can figure out a lot of things, but so much of what you're seeing and you're hearing is just not true. I want to close with a commentary written by Dr. Carol Swain. Carol, I haven't interviewed her. I did years ago interview her, and she, the context for my interviewing her was that she was a real strong supporter of the Southern Poverty Law Center. She really appreciated what they'd done to black Americans. She was a professor at Vanderbilt University, and she went to a rally of the SPLC. But when she got there and actually saw what they were doing, she realized that there was nothing related to what her thoughts were, what the image was. It was all about pressing for LGBT rights. It was all about protecting the Muslim Brotherhood. It was shocking to her. And she spoke out about that. As a result of that, she ended up losing her job at Vanderbilt. So that's who she is. This commentary, I want to read a bit to you. She wrote one called Barack Obama and the Evil Plan to Destroy President Trump. She said, we should be alarmed because of what we know about the Obama presidency and its disregard for American traditions about elections and how one treats political opponents. There's no sense of protocol or qualms about abusing power or trampling the U.S. Constitution. She says a lot of different things. She says that President Obama is obsessed with President Trump, and Obama is supported by his army of paid and unpaid protesters as seen in Organizing for Action, a pro-Obama group that will not leave the president alone. Did I include, I'm actually kind of glad I did not include, but I need to, that Carol is black. She's an African-American woman, because that's important to this particular thing that she's writing. So she goes on to say she thinks that President Obama has something to hide. From the moment Donald Trump became a serious threat to the leftist agenda, he was targeted with Saul Alinsky's evil strategies. Now, you've heard me mention Saul Alinsky often, his rules for radicals, but I want to read Carol's words here. She said, just think about America, the frenetic opposition to the president and Alinsky's rules for radicals, his rules number 8, 11, and 12. And here's 8. Keep the pressure on. Never let up. Keep trying new things to keep the opposition off balance. As the opposition masters one approach, hit them from the flank with something new. Rule 11. If you push a negative hard enough, it will push through and become a positive. Violence from the other side can win the public to your side because the public sympathizes with the underdog. Rule 13. Pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Cut off the support network and isolate the target from sympathy. Go after people and not institutions. People hurt faster than institutions. And this is Carol's words now. President Trump and his administration have had the above tactics unleashed against them. The end goal is to keep him so distracted, and his appointees will never have time to adjudicate any of the criminal behavior committed by the Obama administration. If only we had an independent media committed to truth. Alas, we seem to have a media committed to partisan politics. In Saul Alinsky's style, the goal is to isolate the president, keep the pressure on him, push all the negatives, and isolate him from friends and family. It is an evil strategy born from the imagination of the man who dared to give Satan a shout-out in the epigraph of his book, Rules for Radicals. And this is Alinsky's words. Lest we forget at least an over-the-shoulder acknowledgement to the very first radical, from all our legends, mythology, and history, and who is to know where mythology leaves off and history begins, or which is which, the very first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom, Lucifer. By the way, Saul Alinsky dedicated his Rules for Radicals to Lucifer, and you might recall that Mrs. Clinton was a student of Saul Alinsky. He was her mentor. She wrote her master's thesis on Rules for Radicals. And you may recall that Barack Obama was also a student of Saul Alinsky. Not him personally, because he was dead by the time Obama grew up, but Obama was a student of the school that it probably has its epicenter in Chicago. Saul Alinsky, he learned, by the way, his rules and his methods from watching the mob. It's just a fascinating story. But so two things today. We are being gaslighted by the news media, by Barack Obama and others, and also having these Alinsky methods used against our president. There's just no question about it. So be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And you can be. We all can be. Truth is very powerful. We serve the God of all truth, so we need to keep speaking that. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.